Hey everyone, you tuned into Comedy History 101. We have a very special episode for you in store today on the history of National Lampoon Lemmings. Yes, the theater show that started it all and turned into Saturday Night Live. And without further ado...
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured the audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.
Let's try the eyes now, the eyes. Cross. Ready? And cross. And cross. And cross. And cross. And cross. And hold.
Well, the Nat Lamp, just as affectionately called by both its friends and enemies, and has taken its anarchism off its pages and put it on the stage in review form. And only the National Lampoon would attempt to syncretize the violence and banality of American life.
Okay, take it to the right.
And what you heard there was an excerpt from the rehearsal of the 1973 stage show National Lampoon Lemmings. It was a spin-off of the humor magazine National Lampoon, and the show starred John Belushi, Christopher Guest, and Chevy Chase. And yes, you've tuned into another episode of Comedy History 101. Where we school you in comedy. I, of course, am Harmon Leon, and with me, of course, Scott Kalanico. Scott, how are you?
Top of the morning to you, Harmon. I'm coming at you from the Emerald Isle of Berlin.
Why would they call it the Emerald Isle?
God, not
oh,
sure.
Oh, you're doing that deconstruction humor.
Yeah,
much like the deconstruction humor that you would find in the stage production of National Lampoon Lemmings.
That's right. I'm making a statement.
Yeah. Actually, I think that clip wasn't from National Lampoon Lemmings we heard up front. It was from, which we'll dive into later, it was called The National Lampoon Show, which was another stage show, because in that clip we saw Gilda Radner, and what we're talking about today is the production of National Lampoon Lemmings, which premiered in 1973, and of course it launched the careers of John Belushi, Christopher Guest, Chevy Chase, and what the performance was it was a musical stage mockumentary that parodied and satirized the Woodstock Festival.
Come on, hold it down. Okay, first of all, I'd like to welcome you to the Woodstock Memorial Festival of Peace, Love, and Death.
Which was at that time, that was only, I mean, you're only talking about 5 years after the fact. You know, actually, if they started it in 1972, so they're actually, that's only 3 years. So Woodstock was in 69. So, you know, it's a pretty topical and current event for these folks to be doing a show about.
Yeah, so I think what they're parodying there in the musical spoof was the kind of like the death of the hippie era, where they're satirizing the peace love vibe of Woodstock crossed with the death vibe of the Rolling Stone Altamont Speedway concert, where what happened there? One guy got stabbed when the Hell's Angels were the security guards.
Yeah, and my uncle was there.
No way.
Yeah, my uncle was Altamont.
was he a Hell's Angel?
No, he was like an original hippie. He was like a for real hippie guy. Like lived in.
Oh, that's right. You're from the Bay Area.
Yeah. Lived in Haight-Ashbury and everything.
Did he see what happened? Because as you know, the movie Gimme Shelter was the documentary.
Yeah.
The Males Brothers filmed that.
Yeah. I don't know if he saw the stabbing. I never quite talked to him about that. But yeah, he was a for real hippie.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. And actually, the title of the National Lampoon show, Lemming, actually comes from a line in Gimme Shelter, kind of a quip that said, "It's like the lemmings of the sea." I guess that was a line from Gimme Shelter. So the premise of the Woodstock-esque parody Lemmings was it was a mock rock festival called Woodshuck. Their catchphrase was 3 days of peace, love, and death. And John Belushi served as sort of like the MC of the concert, which kind of parodied the Woodstock documentary. And in between sort of musical satirized acts, he would provide suggestions of how the attendees could kill themselves.
Now, we all know why we came here. A million of us We came here to off ourselves. Right? And from now on, man, it's a free concert! It's free!
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting is because that's what I obviously never saw the performance live or was there, and there's a clip that's floating around online that you can find on YouTube, which is actually from HBO when they were about to air the special. They were going to record it, they were going to air it, and then it got lost. So you can see this for a little bit, you can see, but it is just the kind of the musical parts of the show, which is interesting.
Yeah, so when, just going off on that, so it was actually recorded for HBO. Yeah. They had a director named Joshua White, and he was scheduled to... Well, he actually did direct What You Find Online, and it was going to be called... I think it was going to be called, like, National Lampoon Television, and this would be part of it. So either... I heard two things that happened. Either all the original tapes were lost, or just HBO... blatantly turned it down when they saw the footage. But fortunately for Joshua White, he ended up working for HBO when he directed the HBO special called Disco Beaver from Outer Space, which was a National Lampoon production in 1978 and became the lowest rated comedy show in HBO history.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's something to aspire to. Interesting note, Joshua White went on to direct some episodes of Seinfeld.
Really?
Yeah. Yep. So I guess it just proves if you stick around long enough.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, other people did get careers out of this. John Belushi, who at the time, I think he was like 23, 24, was sort of the big breakout star of National Lampoon, Lemmings. Christopher Guest, who was like 25 at the time, he was nominated for an Obie Award he composed all the musical songs or co-composed all the musical songs. Chevy Chase, who I think he, with long hair, was like 30 at the time. Not a writer on the show, but he was hired as an actor. Obviously, you know, they all went on to be on Saturday Night Live.
I have a bit of a trivia that I kind of found. I kind of knew about this, but I'd never seen the whole thing, Harmon. But Christopher Guest, if you didn't know, that he is British and American. His dad was a UN diplomat, which is why he was in New York at the time. And his family is actually of the landed gentry in the UK and has a seat in the House of Lords. So his actual full name is Christopher Hayden Guest, the fifth Baron of Hayden Guest.
Yeah, I mean, I know that because I actually know his brother, Anthony Hayden Guest, who lives here in New York. And he's like in his 80s, but has always been like this journalist who's written for like Vanity Fair and, you know, like did stories on Andy Warhol back in the day and Jean-Michel Basquiat. And his brother talks with a British accent.
Well, that's funny because I knew from being in Austin, I knew Michael McKean's brother, Joel McKean. So like we knew the brothers from Spinal Tap together.
Exactly.
We could have a whole episode about that.
Oh, and it goes further into Spinal Tap. So let's talk about the sort of origins of how National Lampoon Lemmings came about. The official show started on January 25th, 1973, and ended up running 350 performances. The theater was actually a famous theater. So it was actually, and it was performed at the Village Gate, which is, it's now defunct, but it's a nightclub in the Village on Bleecker Street and Thompson. And it's a club where not only Jimi Hendrix played, but also Miles Davis.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so pretty, you know, it's no more. I tried to look it up to see if it's still around. So Scott... Yes. How this all came about was, first of all, you know, we've talked about the history of National Lampoon in our episode on what was the name of that really sort of mediocre biopic?
Oh, the drunk. No, it was
a stupid feudal gesture.
A feudal and stupid gesture. Yeah.
Yeah, so if you want to check out more of the history of National Lampoon, we have discussed it in the past on a previous episode on the biopic, A Stupid Feudal Gesture. But as we all know, you know, National Lampoon, the iconic humor magazine, they wanted to branch out. So in 1972, they came up with the album National Lampoon's Radio Dinner, which it was produced by Tony Hendra, who was also the co-writer, co-producer of National Lampoon, Lemmings. Some of you might know him as the band manager in Spinal Tap. Bring it all back to Spinal Tap.
Yeah, with the cricket bat.
Now, I noticed this here, you got this cricket bat here.
Yes.
You play?
No, I carry this partly out of, I don't know, sort of,
affectation?
Yes, I mean, it's a kind of totemistic thing, you know, but to be quite frank with you, it's come in useful in a couple of situations. Right. Certainly in the topsy-turvy world of heavy rock, having a good solid piece of wood in your hand is quite often useful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he was the one, they went to him to produce not only the radio hour and the stage show, because he actually, in the early or mid-60s, he was a member of the Cambridge Footlights, which you always hear about, an Edinburgh festival. I think he was there around the same time as John Cleese, which is like that famous, you know, comedy troupe that you hear at Edinburgh that has like the Monty Python guys. But when you go to see it in Edinburgh, it's always like really fucking lame.
Yeah, I think he was also in like a comedy duo that I think had a couple of appearances on some big like Ed Sullivan and things like that over here.
Yeah, so definitely Merv Griffin. So his comedy duo is called Hendra and, am I pronouncing this, Ouellette? It's just the other guy's last name, so they went with that. So from there, they put the trust in Tony Hendra to produce their first album, the National Lampoon Radio Dinner in 1972.
I resent performing for your fuckers. Tell me, what do you know? A lot of faggot middle-class kids wearing long hair and trendy clothes. Look, I'm not your fucking parents, and I'm sick of uptight hippies coming knocking at my door with a fucking peace symbol. Get this back, man. I don't owe your fuckers anything, and all I got to say is fuck you.
Which featured the music of Paul Jacobs, who not only went on to do the co-write the music for National Lampoon, Lemmings, along with Christopher Guest, but check this out, Scott. He ended up being the, ready for it? Want to say it together on three? Piano player for Meatloaf.
Oh, yeah, the piano player for Meatloaf. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but also another trivia about him. As a child, he performed at Carnegie Hall. So, pretty talented guy. Yeah.
Paul Jacobs,
So from the success of that, the first album, they decided to do a second album, which they said was going to be a parody of Woodstock, which was called Lemmings. And so for the album, what they did was they said they were going to do a three-night performance of Lemmings and record it live, and that would be the next National Lampoon album. Well, smash cut 350 performances later, Lemmings took off, and it extended 347 more performances than they initially attended.
Okay, now the blue belladonna's been tested, and it's real killer stuff, so get into it. But the brown strychnine has been cut with acid. So if you want to do half, and you don't get off, what do? You do the other half, right?
Yeah, that's pretty good. It's not a bad run.
Yeah, exactly. And just as a footnote, do we call it name dropping when we name drop the famous people? Or do you think our listeners actually enjoy it?
I think they do. It's part of us intertwining ourselves with history.
Yeah,
comedy history in this case.
Yeah, where we school you in comedy. Subscribe on iTunes and comment. I've actually been on Tony Hendra's podcast twice. So,
how was that?
It was all right. Yeah, definitely. He has a podcast called, I think it's called First Edition or something like that. But, you know, just one of these iconic comedy guys who, you know, was the, you know, the guy who was pretty instrumental in getting Lemmings onto the Village Gate stage for 350 performances.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
So, you know what I learned? So basically what you saw on YouTube was just essentially just half of the actual live Lemmings show.
Yeah, I didn't want to get too much into that in case you were going to talk about it right now.
No, let's dive into that. So the first half was just like random sketches. I don't know, maybe thematic. I don't know, because there isn't footage that exists. And the second half of the show was the, you know, what we see on YouTube, which was the Woodstock parody.
Yeah, I think on that clip that's on, it's not a clip, it's almost an hour, so it's the show that's on YouTube, there's a couple sketches like scattered in that, and I take it that those are the two sketches that made up the beginning of the show.
Hey! Shitty!
Hey, hey, retarded!
John!
Hey! Hey, 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 hey,
hey,
hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey,
hey,
old buddy, man!
Hey,
oh, it's been such a guy, 1, 2, 3, man!
Hey, man.
Hey, how you been, old buddy?
Where you been?
Man,
I ain't seen you around.
I was in Newark, John.
In Newark?
Yeah, I was on vacation.
Oh, wow.
Nice vacation.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, so yeah. I found a 1973 New York Times review of the show, which they said the first half failed and the second half soared. So that's kind of interesting. I like to see like what kind of flops.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it'd be cool to see the whole thing. I mean, I guess we'll get into our personal opinions of it in a little bit. But yeah, I would like to have seen how that all worked out. And it's just interesting. I think maybe by the time they recorded the show, they kind of knew, you know, they kind of knew they couldn't just have a whole first half with just all sketches, because that would just, you know, I think it's kind of killed any kind of momentum.
Yeah, so what I read is like the show just kind of evolved as they went, you know.
Right.
So some sketches, you know, didn't make it and other sketches did, and they would sort of, you know, filter those in and out. Here's what I read. The opening skit is about high school sex. The point is not the humor is tasteless, which it is. Tasteless could be funny, but it needs not be brainless, says New York Times on the opening sketch.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Another sketch that the New York Times didn't like was, I think it was like sort of a satire on MASH, but all the doctors are high on acid.
Yes,
little dated.
That's the one you can see on YouTube. That's in the.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one that's in there.
And what was your take on it?
Yeah, I mean, it's everybody's on acid. There's a lot of acid jokes in there.
Is my assistant here yet?
No, he's late, and the operation cannot start without him.
Well, if the operation cannot start without him, then how can he be late? I mean, don't you see time is only a concept? Jeff, Lassie's going in the toilet!
Barstool!
Yeah, again, that's sort of an overall critique of watching Lemmings is a little bit of dated humor or extremely dated humor. Because it's just essentially you have to see the Woodstock documentary, and what it is, you know, people doing send-ups of all the musicians that were at Woodstock. Like you have Christopher Guest. He does like a Bob Dylan impression, and he does a song called Positively Wall Street.
You say the world's in trouble. You say you don't feel free. You don't know where you're going. Brother, don't ask me. Well, I don't give a darn, no. Out behind the barn.
Oh, and then other things you have, like Chevy Chase does like a John Denver impression. And he does a song called Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
What else was there?
Well, there's Christopher Guest doing, again, I mean, because he kind of nails it. Like on because I was listening to it, not really watching it, and he just nailed it on that Bob Dylan one. And then he does like a James Taylor kind of takeoff.
Shooting up a highway on the roadmap of my wrist. Baby, I just scratched you off my list. I'll miss your tie-dyed bed sheets and your pretty spearmint mouth, but my highway toes are coming to the south.
Yeah, so I think that one he nailed, and he was sort of parodying James Taylor being out of mental health facilities, and I think the song was something about getting a lobotomy or something.
Yeah, something like that. And then he also, Lord Hayden Guest comes on again. He's the odor. He's the owner of the farm where they're having the Lemmings Fest, the Woodchuck Festival.
Well, they asked me to come up here to tell you all how this came to be. Well, two fellas come up from the city in their fancy sports car. They asked me if they could use my land. And I said, sure. And I charged them plenty.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. The James Taylor song was called Farewell to Carolina, Where I Left My Frontal Lobe.
Yeah, that's the lyric, yeah. The title is Carolina in My Mind.
Yes, ma'am, I read you loud and clear. Yes, ma'am, this is the present.
Hey, friends, from the creators of Comedy History 101, check out our other podcast, This is the President, where we not only dissect the politics of the day, but also historic presidential phone calls. You can find us on our site, wordsoverchair.com, or subscribe on iTunes, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Yes, ma'am, I read you loud and clear.
Yeah, so again, it's sort of an easy premise for writing the show, because you have Belushi as the MC making all the announcements, and then you just filter in the different musical acts. So it's like, as far as like writing it, it was written again by Tony Hendra, Michael Keaty, I'm not sure who that is, Sean Kelly, who was one of the head editors at National Lampoon, with uncredited writing from Doug Kenny, who was one of the founders of National Lampoon, PJ O'Rourke, Harold Ramis, Ann Beats, who went on to become the first female writer on Saturday Night Live, and Henry Beard.
Yeah. It was good stuff. It's a pretty cool idea, too. It was actually, because they're addressing the audience. So it's like the audience is part of the show. So it was kind of cool. And I could see that, you know, how that would work and be kind of a novelty.
Yeah, so I think it was Belushi's telling the audience how they could kill themselves, like, in between the musical acts. So, you know, he was parodying, like, the Don't Take the Brown Acid thing from the Woodstock movie, and also from Woodstock itself, where the movie was filmed.
Yeah.
Like, he was like, don't take the brown cyanide. It might be laced with acid.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is like, that's a thing where we can't unsee John Belushi doing that part. You know, I think it must have been funnier back then. We did know who this guy was, and he's kind of comes out with all this energy and everything. And right now, all you can do is see, you know, every time I watch it, to see John Belushi standing there.
Yeah, but it's like 23, 24-year-old John Belushi. And it's like, you know, it's just like he just had his chops.
Yeah, no, he was, I think the New York Times pointed him out in that article, if we can read. Do you have the quote there handy? It was a pretty good quote from him.
Yes, I do. So the quote from the New York Times review, the first New York Times review of Lemmings was, "The discovery of Lemmings is John Belushi, a bushy bearded clown with a deceptively offhanded manner."
Deceptively,
what is that?
Yes.
Yeah, what does that mean? Deceptively offhanded manner.
Well,
is that a good thing?
Like offhand, yeah. It's like, you know, the thing with the eyebrows. He's deceptively offhand. Comes offhand. And then, of course, his Joe Cocker is still funny.
Out of all the barrel. Well, I've been trying to get myself together. I got into arts and crafts, then got into leather. But you all left me when the times were lean. Now I'm on the cover of the magazine.
Yeah, so that, I would say, is the standalone stealing the show moment of National Lampoon's Lemmings, is John Belushi performing Joe Cocker, which later got performed on Saturday Night Live in the first season.
Yeah, with Joe Cocker. Which,
yeah, and so how that came about was, so Rob Reiner was the host of the episode of Saturday Night Live where Belushi first performed Joe Cocker. So obviously Rob Reiner saw the Lemmings production and coaxed John Belushi in doing it for the episode.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. Yeah, that was excellent. I think one of the things, to go back to the show, I mean, which is the whole episode, today's episode is about, what was really interesting is that the one of the very last acts that goes on, do you remember the band that goes on at the end?
Yes, I do. So it was a metal band, yes. And again, the whole theme of Lemmings was, again, like Lemmings, the concert promoter is trying to coax everyone and killing themselves. So tell us the name of the last band.
Well, not oddly enough or premonitionally enough, or we don't know who got influenced by who, but the name of the band at the end of the show that closes Lemmings is called Megadeth.
Yeah, exactly. So I was thinking of that too. I was thinking like, oh, are they going to actually have Megadeth on? Yeah. Or yeah. So, and I don't know what year Megadeth formed, but maybe, one of our listeners can tell us.
Well, I mean, if we want to go into it, so that's after Dave Mustaine got kicked out of Metallica. So I think this is like early 80s, very early 80s. So, I mean, he must have... I would be willing to bet that he kind of lifted the name or borrowed it or somehow kind of took it from the Lemmings show. I mean, it would be off the book to suppose that.
Yeah, and what's really cool about Lemmings, which you later see in Saturday Night Live and in John Landis movies, is the lead singer of Megadeth is John Belushi.
Yeah.
And again, going with the theme, he says something to the effect of, do you know, to the audience, that pure rock sound can kill? And then he encourages the audience to put their heads on the amp.
Yeah, there you go, man.
So, here's another funny side note is Tony Hendra went to Matty Simmons, who owned the National Lampoon, and said he needed some extra money so he could buy the cast marijuana. But actually ended up buying cocaine.
Ah, well, no, it was the 70s, man. It was okay back then.
Yeah. But he's like, I think the quote was like, anyone could go out and buy marijuana. But so that's sort of what the show was fueled on. So let's segue into the sort of the reception of National Lampoon's Lemmings, because it's actually... one of the actresses, her name is Alice Platon, actually won an Opie Award for her performance in Lemmings.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, so she was a Broadway actress who appeared in Gypsy and Oliver, and in Lemmings she performed a song called Pizza Man, which was like, sort of like a parody of the song like Leader of the Pack. Mm-hmm. And the song details, it says here, the song details... a girl singing about her dead boyfriend who died in a highway smash-up and ended up looking a lot like a pizza.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Yeah, and she went and opened.
Well, that's good. Well, congrats to Alice.
Yeah, and Christopher Guest, as we mentioned up top, he was nominated for Obie for his musical score, but did not win the award.
Oh, robbed. Robbed.
Oh, and here, I guess if we're going back to trivia... because of the success of Lemmings, the circulation of National Lampoon magazine jumped. So while the show was still going on, I believe they went to Matty Simmons, who owned National Lampoon, and asked if they could get a raise for their appearance in the show. This is according to Tony Hendra in a Harper's Magazine article. And Matty Simmons, in return, said about the cast, Guest, and Belushi that they were a dime a dozen.
Okay, all right.
yeah, little egg on his face, because one of the people that saw the performance of Lemmings was, of course, TV producer Lorne Michaels.
Mm-hmm. Which he went on to found a little show that I think is still running to this day, not quite sure, called Saturday Night Live.
Yes, exactly. And he pretty much scooped not only a lot of the talent of National Lampoon, but also a lot of the writers, like Michael O'Donohue, who I think was also uncredited as a writer for Lemmings, you know, scooped him up as the head writer. So essentially the first season of Saturday Night Live was essentially the first season of a National Lampoon TV show.
Yeah, more or less. Exactly. Yep.
Which is ironic because they actually filmed it for HBO as the National Lampoon TV show, which, you know, didn't get picked up.
Nope. Yeah, it's always odd, those things, when you try to translate a stage show right directly into TV, and sometimes it just doesn't work.
Yeah, so, you know, it's like, again, going back to our previous episodes on, like, say, The Groove Tube and Tunnel Vision and Kentucky Fried Movie, what Saturday Night Live needed was, you know, kind of that influx of, you know, the TV generation regurgitating pop culture comedy of, you know, just growing up around, you know, bad TV shows and bad commercials, which, you know, again, if we're talking about the road to Saturday Night Live, it took the energy, the musical energy of a stage show like Lemmings and mixed it with the pop culture sensibilities of a movie like Groove Tube. So that's kind of how, you know, the seeds of Saturday Night Live came about.
Exactly.
So here's something I learned just today was because of the success of Lemmings in 1975, and this is the same year Saturday Night Live came out, so this probably happened, you know, before the premiere of Saturday Night Live, was National Lampoon launched another show, a live show called, I think it was just called The National Lampoon Show, which was another off-Broadway show which premiered at the New Palladium Club on West 51st Street.
Okay, and who was in this show?
Ah, so that clip we heard up front was actually from a rehearsal of that, because that starred Gilda Radner, Bill Murray, Harold Ramis, John Belushi, and Brian Doyle Murray.
And also, who
played President Ford in this sketch.
Yeah, and also, in that, not referenced here, but in that clip is also, that's Joe Flaherty from SCTV fame.
Oh, yeah, he was in that. I always love seeing young Joe Flaherty.
I know, it's always
such
wild,
an enigma of comedy.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, I think, again, if you want to hear another episode we've done on the history of Second City TV, I always just go, he's just like the pillar of SCTV, because he's sort of the straight man in a lot of the bits, but he's just so damn funny.
Yeah, he does a really good straight man getting frustrated character.
Yeah, exactly. So the National Lampoon show, their follow-up live show, it got kind of mixed reviews. Gilda Radner, you know, as we heard up front, she played Patty Hearst, which is kind of funny. But the New York Times review, they didn't like the sketch where Gilda Radner, as a victim of gang rape, takes time out to quiz her assailants calmly about their qualifications.
Alrighty. Yep.
The edgy humor. But as with their review of Lemmings, the New York Times said the funniest actor is John Belushi, the only repeater from the original Lemming cast, and they described him with a bear-like presence and a malleable bark of a voice, who does quick impersonations of Truman Capote and Marlon Brando, which, you know, he later went on and did on Saturday Night Live.
Uh-huh. Yep, exactly.
And here's a funny thing. So he ended that stage show by getting on a mega horn and saying to the audience, "The whole audience is under arrest."
I don't know how appropriate that is, but that's the ending to Monty Python and the Holy Grail, too.
Really? No, I thought it's just like the cop just puts his hand in front of the camera.
Yeah, but everybody's getting arrested at the end.
That's true. That's very true. Here's something, again, researching this, here's something that you would like, Scott. In 2011, National Lampoon was still around. Have we talked about this, the final days of National Lampoon?
No.
The 2007, well, Scott, tell us what happened to the guy who owned National Lampoon during that era.
Well, I just know this because I know you've got lots of stories about this, but you're talking about 2007, 2008, and this gentleman went to jail, I believe.
No, not jail, prison.
Prison, okay. Big boy prison, big boy jail.
Yeah, so what was his name? Like Dan Lykin. Uh-huh. He was doing some serious like inside trading on National Lampoon stock. And again, he was a guy who just sort of licensed the name and just would put out anything and everything, this including including a book by one Harmon Leon called National Lampoon's Road Trip USA.
And then what
buy
was
it
that?
On Amazon.
Yeah, like the rise of Taj and all that. That Van Wilder dude.
Yeah, so they resurrected the Lemming Show strictly by name because the Lemming Show, it wasn't they actually just had a sketch group, but they called it National Lampoon's Lemmings. Mm-hmm. Because, and see, that's a failure right there, because it had nothing to do with it would have worked if they were like mocking, say, Coachella or something, like a music festival at the time.
Oh, that's a good one, dude. We should do that.
We should.
Okay.
Should I edit that part out so that idea doesn't get stolen?
Exactly.
edit point here. That is a good idea. Yeah. But it should have been it. But I actually went. I went with my friend Adam Spiegelman. It was playing in L.A. And at the time I was working for, you know, that carnation of the National Lampoon because I did that book for them. And so we got invited to like the opening night. Adam Spiegelman, you met him. He was like the comedy booker for Jimmy Kimmel Show. Right, again, yeah. Not name dropping, just simply our listeners like to hear we're connected.
We do have connections with comedy itself.
Yeah, so again, it was like one of those things where there's this very Hollywood thing where either everyone's so jaded that they don't laugh, or everyone way over the top laughs more than it should be laughed at.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening. And people were just like falling out of their seats laughing. And me and Adam were just like looking at each other, just going, is it just me, or is this like really not that funny? Uh-huh. I just remember it was just like a guy would, every other sketch would come back on stage being Chuck Norris.
Okay.
That's all I really remember about it. But again, it was like they licensed and scrubbed the National Lampoon name through the mud and tried to capitalize on Lemmings.
Yeah, the funniest thing about that is you sent me that link to the Lemmings TV show, which, of course, I couldn't find anywhere, any mention on YouTube at all. And then when I actually looked at your link, it went to this Wikipedia page for the network was called Media TV or something. Anyway, whatever the network, quote, network, unquote, it was airing on. Like, the Wikipedia page hadn't been updated in 10 years. So...
Yeah, in the 2000s, there were a lot of those type of things popping up. Yeah. Like, we did a show for something called Strike TV, and they actually had some big names. But, yeah, just all those – again, it's like those things – like, when they popped up, they were getting so much money thrown at them to the point where people realized that there's no means of these – you know, mini web networks making money.
Yeah.
Then the guy, you know, with the purse strings just pulls the plug.
Yeah. Then they're like, okay, nice try, guys. But that was the dot-com boom.
Exactly. Exactly. So I guess in summary, what do you think is the takeaway of National Lampoon's Lemmings place in comedy history?
Well, naturally, as with the series that we've been doing, it's like that led to a lot of the TV careers of a lot of people who, you know, are still out there today. Chevy Chase and a lot of the people from Saturday Night Live, Bill Murray and whatnot. I think it was very much a product of the time. You can go watch it if people, our listeners, are so inclined. You can find that clip on the YouTube. And kind of
or better yet, we will post the clip. Yeah, wordsovercheer.com. We will post a link.
Yeah, or you can even easier to remember, Hartman, because this is called Comedy History 101. You just go to comedyhistory101.com right there.
Exactly, exactly. I think it's, you know, an important place in comedy history because, like you said, it cemented the careers of, like, so many people that just went on to do great things. And also, it's sort of what we find today is just how an entity like National Lampoon ended up spreading their brand across several mediums. And, you know, they were kind of like the first entertainment entity to do that. Like, started as a magazine, then started putting out records, then went to a stage show, and then went to a radio show, and then went to movies. And it's just like, they were kind of the first ones to just, you know, really spread their brand in that sort of way.
Yeah, they were going gangbusters for a while there.
Yeah, so, you know, and again, sort of not a lot of belly laughs, sort of dated, but John Belushi doing Joe Cocker just really steals the show.
And I think the Christopher Guest stuff is worth watching too. The Bob Dylan spot on, and then the James Taylor as well.
Yeah, and you see Chevy Chase playing the drums too.
Yeah, I know.
With long hair.
Yeah, long hair and no shirt on. It's pretty. He's in the metal band. That's him playing drums in Megadeth.
Yeah, I think he's playing like drums all throughout too. Yeah.
I think he played him in Steely Dan.
Oh yeah, yeah, maybe so. And what's also interesting, it ties back to, you know, again, we've done several episodes on the road to Saturday Night Live is Chevy Chase, you know, hired for this. This is 1973, but like in 1972, he was just performing down the road at the Channel 1 Theater, which the movie Groove Tube, you know, got all their sketches and turned into, you know, the first movie that, you know, very influential on Saturday Night Live. And it's just those theaters are within just a few blocks from each other.
Yeah, easy to get around New York. A quick cab ride.
Oh, for these, you just walk it, dude. Why would you waste money on a cab? Yeah,
yeah, it's New York.
It's just the village to, Lower East Side.
Or some cab driver tries to hit you while you're crossing the crosswalk. Hey, I'm walking here.
yeah, exactly. So with that, I think it that does it for the, you know, the history of National Lampoon Lemmings here on
Comedy History 101.
Where we school you in comedy. And with that, it's time to plug away. Scott, what do you have to plug?
Well, Harmon, I have something to plug, but I am not allowed to plug it yet. I'll be able to plug it on the next show. But until then, you can hear me and Harmon in our other podcast, This is the President. Just this week, we put out one with Ronald Reagan and Johnny Cash. So that's one that you definitely want to turn into. You can find those right here at wordsoverchair.com. Also on your favorite podcast sites like Stitcher, Last.fm, iTunes, and of course Google Play.
And for me, my plug away is, hey, it's the holiday season. Looking for a gift for the Trump hater in your family? Why not check out my new book, Meet the Deplorables Infiltrating Trump America. It's all about my true life exploits, going out undercover in disguise and infiltrating Trump supporters in Trump America. You can find copies on Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble. So check it out. Oh, by the way, we also have some listener mail. Do we have a sting for that?
Yeah.
No, we don't.
No, I don't have one.
Okay. Do you want to do something? Do you want to make like a noise that could be the sting?
Sting.
There we go. I'll just put some music
on that. There are plenty of stings on that YouTube library, man. You can find them. They're free.
Yeah. So, listener mail. So, we got a comment from one JDP on our History of South Park Spirit of Christmas. JDP writes, I was working in the industry and saw the Fox Commission short. Having a copy was like currency in Hollywood. Ah, very interesting. Very good to comment.
I remember that. We have a friend of ours by the name of Chip. Remember, he was working in L.A. at the time, and that was one of the things he brought back from L.A. with him. He had a copy of that show.
Oh, that's very cool. So, yeah, it was like viral video by actually handing off to people.
It was right before viral video was about to hit it.
I think it was like actually, and again, we talk about this in this that episode, which you can find on iTunes or on our site, Comedy History 101, was that was actually the first viral video on the internet.
More or less, actually, yeah.
I think you had to like download it.
Yeah, that was when you had to get the Spirit of Christmas. Yeah, that one.
And we also have another listener mail. And if you want to send some listener mail, you could send it to our website. Is it wordsoverchair.com? Or
you can send it to both, dude. They both go in the same place.
That's right. And they get to us, and they get read like this. So we got a comment from a listener named CJ Hornsby on our history of SCTV. He says about the photo on our site, wordsoverchair.com, he said, that cast picture is from Edmonton and was taken by Robbie Rousseau in the winter of 1981. Well, thank you, CJ. Thank you for that interesting bit of trivia, because that's what we're all about, is history and trivia.
And comedy.
Comedy history. And with that, thanks a lot for tuning in to another episode of
Comedy History 101,
where we school you in comedy. Thanks a lot, everyone. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured the audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.